From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Here's a pop quiz. What's the hottest issue on the minds of Republican voters these days? Abortion, Social Security, war, the Supreme Court? No. According to a recent poll, it's illegal immigration. One Republican congressman calls immigration the highest octane issue in America. Some 11 million undocumented foreigners are now in the U.S., with maybe 400,000 more coming every year. There are plenty of laws on the books against it, but millions of willing workers and an army of willing employers ignore those laws every minute of every day in every state. The Republican majority in Washington is fiercely divided over what to do, from pro-business guest worker advocates to Minuteman-style critics who want walls and roundups. It's a rift the White House is trying to straddle. So far, that isn't working. This hour, On Point, America's borders and the boiling immigration debate inside the GOP. You can join the conversation, what should we do about the 11 million illegals in the U.S. now and the hundreds of thousands more that come each year? Welcome them or send them home? Make them Americans or make them stay in a shadow world where wages are low and hours are long? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We will hear in this hour from Indiana Congressman John Hostetler, who wants a wall on the Mexican border, and from New Mexico Governor Democrat Bill Richardson, who declared a state of emergency on immigration last summer in his border state. But first, joining me from Capitol Hill is Stephen Dynan. He's Congressional Bureau Chief for The Washington Times, and the immigration debate has been his beat. Stephen Dynan, thanks for being with us.
How are you, Tom?
We're good. A great big split in the Republican Party, President Bush having trouble with it. Describe the split for us. What are the polls in this GOP debate, Stephen?
On the one side, you have the folks who are called the restrictionists, and they range from, as you described it a moment ago, the folks who want to have a barrier, or either a fence or a smart barrier on the border, and want to essentially deport or have the illegal aliens now in the United States essentially go home through attrition. On the other side, you have folks who think that that immigration should be close to not exactly a free flow. There should be some limits on it and some more controls on it to essentially on the border, but believe that there are jobs that can't be filled right now through American workers, and that the economy and for that matter, human rights demand that we have a flow of foreign workers, and would legalize the ones now here illegally, and in some cases allow those foreign workers to come and stay.
We know there's a lot of legislation being proposed very recently, but give us the sort of deep dynamic behind this first, Stephen. What are the two? Why is this so hot in the GOP? Why is it so hard to solve in the GOP? What are the conflicting impulses in the party that have made this so difficult to resolve? I mean, it's difficult in any case, but it seems double hot here.
Yeah, it's really popped up on the forefront of Republicans' radar in the last basically since the beginning of this year, and there's no obvious explanation for it. It's been brewing for about 4 or 5 years. Partially, it's just been with illegal immigration has increased or increased in the late 1990s, and more than anything, those illegal immigration was no longer a problem or a constraint to California and Texas and New York, or the border states, and then New York, which had traditionally been a destination.
Right, it's all over now. Towns in Iowa and North Dakota that have illegal immigration issues.
With the Republican, Heartland Republicans hearing about this from their constituency, they've started responding to it. One other aspect that a number of the Republicans told me this, and from all sides of the debate, told me this after last year's presidential election, they said that essentially the restrictionist side held their tongues and were less critical of the president during the election. Once the election was over, the number of them disagree with where the president is on this and began saying so very forthrightly, and that added fuel to it. And another aspect, there's this network of talk radio shows and whatnot, conservative talk radio shows and television shows that really really takes an interest in this issue and has fueled it among the base.
So now everybody's letting rip, and it's become hot as a pistol again. Where does the White House stand on what the road ahead should be now, and what are the conflicting legislative agendas here, Stephen?
Well, there are three basic questions. For the illegal immigration problem, there are three basic questions that everybody has to answer when they come forward with a plan. The first is, what do you do about illegal aliens who are now here? Do you send them home, or do you legalize them? The second is, what do you do about the border itself? Do you go after more? Do you go after more enforcement? And then the other is, what do you do about the need for workers? Is there a need for workers, and do you create some sort of guest worker program to allow them in? The White House spoke out in early 2004 with its proposal that was yes to a guest worker plan, sort of vague on the issue of what happens to the illegal aliens who are now here, though they seemed to indicate there should be a path to citizenship for mm-hmm. both them and the guest workers.
Right.
And then we're essentially silent on border security. It sounds like a majority of the Republican Party, at least in the House of Representatives, says there has to be a border security and border enforcement and immigration enforcement. And so the president in the last few months has begun talking about that and seems to agree that there needs to be more done on border enforcement. So he's been brought to that point, but he's still pushing the rest of the party to go for what he calls a comprehensive solution to do those other two parts, deal with the illegal aliens who are now here and deal with the guest worker program as well.
You've got John McCain, Republican senator, and Ted Kennedy, clearly not a Democrat, pushing together for this more comprehensive kind of solution on the one hand, and on the other, John Hostetler, who we'll hear from, and others looking, as I understand it, Stephen, for literally a wall or fence all the way from the Gulf of Mexico to the Pacific. What would that cost? Is that a real suggestion, or is that just to mix it up?
A little bit of both. I think there are definitely a number of members of Congress, and in fact, there seems to be a growing consensus among Republicans that some sort of barrier system is necessary, or should at least be tried. Whether that's an actual fence, wall-to-wall fence from one side to the other, is unclear. A number of folks are pushing for what's called a smart border, which would be a mixture of fences in some places. In other places, it would be better electronic sensors, vehicle barriers in some places where smugglers try and ram through with big trucks. So, and the cost estimates, of course, range from in the low couple billions up. So
way up. And what about the legislative calendar here? Is something imminent, or is this going to be kept alive and boiling through the midterm elections next year?
Both, actually. As usual for Congress, they can answer that question both ways. The House is actually going to have a border security bill or some sort of immigration enforcement bill. They're expected to do that before they leave for the end of this year. The Senate is not going to do anything this year, though the chairman of the Judiciary Committee, Arlen Specter, is circulating a bill among his colleagues. But they're looking, Senator Frist, the majority leader of the Senate, said that they will begin next year, essentially the first major bill they take up next year will be a border security bill that will grow on the Senate floor. It will grow into being a comprehensive bill.
So watch out. Here it comes. Sounds like we may have lost Stephen Dynan there. Stephen, if you're there, we're grateful to you for being with us from Capitol Hill, I think in the Senate Press Gallery this morning. Thanks very much for the briefing from the Washington Times.
You're welcome.
Let me turn to two voices who are in this up to their hips right now. Joining us from Washington, D.C. is Mark Krikorian. He's Executive Director of the Center for Immigration Studies. Mr. Krikorian, thanks for being with us.
Well, thanks for having me.
And with us from Washington, Tamara Jacoby, Senior Fellow at the Manhattan Institute. Ms. Jacoby, thank you for joining us.
Nice to be here.
We've just got a couple of minutes before the break. Tamara Jacoby, first to you, if I may, how do you see the issue here, and what's the heart of a solution in your view?
Well, I want to quarrel a little bit with your characterization that it's the people who want control versus the people who want a lot of immigrants to be workers. We all want control. Everybody mm-hmm. understands that we've lost control of the border, and that's a bad thing, that we're eroding the rule of law within the country. But the question is, how do you get that control?
Mm-hmm.
And I would argue that the only way to get it is with more realistic laws. Right now, our immigration quotas are something like prohibition. They're so unrealistic and so out of sync with our need for workers to do jobs that Americans don't want to do, that we can't enforce them. So I propose that the way to get control is the way the president talks about it, to have a guest worker program that's not a sop for business.
Mm-hmm.
It's a way to keep the economy growing and to have more realistic limits that we can then enforce the heck out of.
Because you can talk extremes all you want, but these people are here, and it's not easy to deal with them. There's no simple.
They're here. They're here, and we need more to continue to come for business to grow. Mm-hmm. Americans want to work inside now. We're much more educated. Our workforce is shrinking. We need these people to do work that we don't want to do. And as long as we pretend they're not coming, it's very hard to have it be legal.
Mark Krikorian, if I may turn to you, we just got a minute before the break. Are you supportive of a guest worker program?
No, absolutely not. I mean, the assumption here is that the arrival of people from overseas is a force of nature like the tides or the weather, and we need to lie back and pretend to enjoy it. And the fact is we have never attempted to enforce the immigration law except for our efforts at the border, which even there are laughably inadequate. But we have never made a serious effort to enforce the immigration laws inside the country.
But doesn't the U.S. economy rely in no small part on these relatively low-wage workers?
Well, the ones who have come clearly have been incorporated into the economy. There's no question about that. The question is that flow of low-skilled labor necessary? Does our 300 million-person continent-spanning high-tech economy depend on the steady drip of high school dropouts from Latin America? And that's just, it's an economic gibberish to make that kind of claim.
You think there's another way? What, a lot of machines in the fields, high technology instead of people?
It's called the free market. And what happens, some of which, the employers will respond in two ways if there are fewer foreign workers. One, raise wages and improve benefits. The other is increase productivity to get more out of a smaller number of workers.
But both of those mean closing the border. Mark Krikorian, Tamara Jacoby, please stand by. We're talking this hour about America's borders, immigration policy, and the bitter showdown inside the GOP. You can join us. Is this undocumented workforce a blessing or a curse? And if they don't pick your strawberries and broccoli, who will? 1-800-423-8255 is the number. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about America's borders, immigration policy, and the bitter showdown inside the GOP. You can join the conversation. What do you think here? What should be done about the nearly 11 million illegal immigrants inside the United States and the nearly 500,000 more who come each year? Is a wall the answer, or a guest worker program and a path to legal residence? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We've been joined in this hour from Washington by Mark Krikorian, Executive Director of the Center for Immigration Studies, who says let's tighten up big time, and by Tamara Jacoby, also in Washington, Senior Fellow at the Manhattan Institute, who says yes, we need control. Let's be smart about it. It's been a tough world out there in the Republican zone for people with Tamara Jacoby's view. I want to listen here to a moment to a piece of right-wing radio talk show from California, the John and Ken Show. Here's Tamara Jacoby trying to defend the Bush administration on its immigration policy.
The Republicans don't face up to this, there's going to be a revolt.
But the
because people here.
No.
He wants to. Look, first of all, the president talks gibberish, okay? Have the president sit down with someone who's going to challenge him point by point and see if he comes out. It's great to stand up and give a 30-second speech without anybody interrupting him or rebutting him. No, he keeps talking about jobs that Americans won't do, but he never lists the jobs. Why won't he do that?
The John and Ken Show coming out of L.A. Tamara Jacoby, why is this such a loaded issue in the Republican quarter?
Well, there's some legitimate frustration. There are many things go into it. There is some legitimate frustration out there. Look, we have 500,000 people coming into the country every year illegally. If you're near them, if they come by your ranch or they're having shootouts mm-hmm. on the highway near where you drive, that's really frustrating.
Yep.
And the numbers have grown enormously in the past couple of decades. And people, as you said earlier in the show, people are getting to parts of the country where there never were immigrants before.
Mm-hmm.
But you combine, I've watched focus groups and talked to people around the country. You combine a couple of people in your town, some new kids in your school, some frustrating changes in your school, you know, the music, there's no music teacher, there's a Spanish translator instead,
yep.
with a sense that the border's out of control, and you generate a fear that amongst you know, the woman in Tennessee or whatever, that the three in her school are soon going to be 300. And that, I think that sense of being out of control is what scares people. And you hear it in the focus groups and in the polling. What people want, they're not necessarily anti-immigrant, but they are frightened by the lack of control in a post-9/11 environment. Add John and Ken and the you know, excuse me, but the congressional Republicans who play to the fears and fuel them, mm-hmm. and you get the kind of frenzy that we're starting to see.
Mark Krikorian, let's wade into solutions here. What are you proposing?
Well, the way this is usually presented is that there's only two options. Mm-hmm. One is round up 11 million people on Tuesday and drive them through the desert in the middle of the night. Or, since we're not going to be doing that, we don't have the capacity to do it even if we wanted to.
Sounds like you would if you could. But
I probably wouldn't, okay. frankly, if mm-hmm. even if magically it were possible, because it would be disruptive since we've incorporated all of these people into our economy.
Sure
Unnecessary
have, yeah.
though they were, they have in fact been incorporated because we have a flexible economy. The thing is that the only alternative to that is not amnesty. Mm-hmm. Which is essentially surrender, which is essentially what the other side is calling for.
And do you mean President Bush when you say the other
President
side?
President Bush, John McCain, Senator Kennedy, mm-hmm. et cetera. Mm-hmm. There's a third way, and that is attrition through enforcement. We didn't get into this situation overnight, and we're not magically going to be able to solve it overnight. What we need to do is start enforcing the immigration laws in a consistent, across-the-board manner, so that instead of allowing the illegal alien population to grow each year, we start squeezing it so it shrinks each year through attrition. And this is not a fantasy. This actually has worked in specific instances.
And where would you squeeze hardest or first?
The first, most important place to squeeze is not so much on the border, because we've already done a lot of work there, and there's more to do, but the biggest bang for the buck that we can get is at the work site, is giving employers a usable tool to verify who is and is not authorized to work. They don't have that now. They're required to check,
right.
But the means of checking is basically as Mickey Mouse paper shuffling.
So put the heat on employers to be sure that they have legal employees.
Well, it's not really put the heat on them. It's empower them to be able to follow the law, because most employers, legitimate, patriotic businesses, want to do the right thing. They don't have the means to do it now. And the Immigration Service has already developed the tool that my own center has already signed up for, and a website that you verify your new employees' legal status, and you get a verification code, and then it's not your problem anymore, as long as you complied with the procedures.
So toughen up, draw the noose in a way, and go for attrition. Tamar Jacoby, will that work? And do you agree with Mark Krikorian that the economy does not really need these hardworking people?
No.
That it could do with higher wages and technology, ultimately without them?
I couldn't disagree more forcefully. In 1960, half of all American men dropped out of high school and went into the unskilled labor force. Today, less than 10% do. We need these workers to do this work. They keep businesses open that then, in turn, employ Anglo-native born people it's often the Mexicans doing the hard dirty work, and the Anglos being the accountants or the managers. They keep whole towns in business where there's a plant or where there's some kind of agriculture, or where there's they keep construction going. They keep resorts in business and resort towns in business.
So what are you proposing as an alternative then? If it's not attrition and move them out, what do you propose?
The answer is to create a legal way for workers to come and do these jobs, so that employers who are growing businesses, what Mark Krikorian proposes would be basically criminalizing economic growth and choking off the veins, as it were, that fuel economic growth.
So you're talking about employment agencies opening up shops in Mexico and funneling people into American companies?
Well, we could talk about how, whether it would be the government, whether it would be a middleman, whether it would be a computerized guest worker program. I think the best bill on the table, it's a computerized jobs bank. Employers would have to advertise for American workers first, prove that they had looked for American workers, pay the Mexican workers or wherever they come from, going wage, treat them the same way. The workers would be able to change jobs.
Would the 11 million stay in the United States? Would they become American citizens?
They would have a chance to earn their way back onto the right side of the law. No one is proposing that we wave a wand and say, you know, forget the past. They did something wrong, and they should have to make good on that. But I think making them pay a fine, pay their back taxes, continue to work, pay taxes, stay on the right side of the law, wait their turn, wait 5 or 6 or more years till the people waiting in Mexico got in. That's a fair trade-off, in my view, for what they did in the first place.
Right, to massage this all into the American economy. Mark Recorn, I'm sure you've got an answer to that, but a lot of callers want to join us as well. Let me turn to them. Liz is calling from Lansing, Michigan. Hi, Liz, you're on the air.
Hello. My brother and I mowed lawns, we delivered newspapers, we did the things that Mexicans do. For President Bush, which I'm a firm supporter of, but for him to say that jobs that illegals do, Americans won't, is ridiculous. Teenagers used to do it. They learned the foundation of financial world.
So what should happen now, Liz? You say you're still willing to do it, so what should happen with all the people who are here?
I do think there should be a roundup. And I think, do you remember when Walmart sidestepped a few years ago and said that, oh, we have nothing to do with maintenance. That's contract labor.
Right. I think they were locking people in stores and all that?
Yes. I think they should be found an outrageous amount. Down to the single people like Zoe Bear. Do you remember when she was trying to be
the nanny gate. So make the fines big and leave those jobs for Americans. Liz, we've got it. Mark Recorian, Tamara Jacoby says, we have to have these people in this country to make our economy work. I think you're saying something else. Liz certainly is. What's your argument?
Well, you know, this is the same argument that plantation owners in the South made about picking cotton. And the fact is, there are no jobs that will not get done without immigrant labor. And the point is not that people are going to, that illegal aliens, excuse me, are going to disappear tomorrow. If that happened magically, there would be disruption in the economy. There's no question about it. The issue is, if we, over time, constrict the supply of foreign workers, what happens then? And frankly, I side with Adam Smith on that one. We have a large, flexible economy, and the idea that high school dropouts are a precious natural resource that we need to import because we're running out of them is silly.
But let me ask you, I'm looking here at a news story from yesterday, Arizona, saying that farmers there who provide almost all of the lettuce, cauliflower, broccoli, and celery for the country during the winter are 35 to 40,000 workers short, and they're talking basically Mexican workers. This is even before the kind of program you're describing, and they're saying the crop may rot in the field here.
Farmers and all employers always want more people bidding on the jobs that they have to offer, because that means they don't have to offer higher wages and better benefits. The point is, the farmers in this case have factored in the expectation that they're going to have this servile labor from Mexico to pick their crops. Well, look what's happened in California. As the supply of illegal aliens has increased, the acreage each year planted in labor-intensive crops goes up because farmers are including that in their calculations.
But Americans are eating those crops.
No, yeah, sure they are. Instead of, though, farmers planting, say, carrots, which you can harvest by machine, and having the Mexicans pick the strawberries in Mexico instead of importing them to pick the strawberries here. There's a kind of beggar-thy-neighbor mercantilist view of the world that says we have to grow everything we're going to eat instead of growing some things here and importing other things from countries where their labor is so much cheaper that they have a comparative advantage.
Mark Recorian, Tamara Jacoby, I wish you'd stand by for a moment. I want to hear a political view on all this. It happens to be from a Democratic governor, Governor Bill Richardson of New Mexico. He was Secretary of Energy in the Clinton administration, past chairman of the Border Governors Association, currently chairman of the Democratic Governors Association, just came out with a autobiography, Between Worlds, The Making of an American Life. Governor Bill Richardson, thank you for joining us from Santa Fe.
Thank you so much for putting me on.
Well, here we are. The Republicans are in turmoil over this in Washington. It's a big, hot, bitter battle. You're right there on the border. And as I look at New Mexico, you look a little internally conflicted. You had a state of emergency about immigration last summer. You're also issuing driver's licenses, if I've got it right, to illegal immigrants. So where do you stand on what ought to be done, Governor Richardson?
Well, I believe three things need to happen. One, we got to tighten border security to prevent terrorists, to prevent illegal traffic, not just of people, but of drugs. That needs to happen. That has to be a massive effort across all the four border states.
A wall? A 2,000-mile fence, Governor?
No, not a wall. That makes no sense. It's going to be penetrated. That sends a wrong signal. What we need is more Border Patrol agents, more equipment, more radars, more sensors, aerial vehicles.
So border security, got it.
Border security. That's one thing. The second thing we need is enforceable laws that say if you're an employer and you knowingly hire illegal aliens, that you will be penalized with a fine or something stronger. And then third, you got to find a way to realistically deal with the 12 million undocumented workers that live in America right now, including in your own state. So what do? Is we set up a legalization path, a guest worker program, not amnesty, not citizenship, so that those that are living and behaving properly and paying taxes and are participating in civic activities can basically stay for periods of time, come in and out, mostly from Mexico.
But they'll never be citizens? Doesn't that set us up for something like what France is overrun by right now, a big population of people who never have a chance to be part of the mainstream?
Well, they do become part of the mainstream. Right now, they're living in the shadows. They're living basically in fear. They're living in the shades. I say we bring them in. And this is why I felt it was important to bring licenses to undocumented workers, because you can keep track of them. It promotes traffic safety. They get car insurance. It's a realistic way of dealing with a problem. And so there's bills in Congress right now, Senator McCain and Kennedy, in fact, two pretty extremes on many issues, have a bill that says let's deal with the 12 million in a realistic way with a legalization path. That's what I am for.
Bill Richardson, as a Democratic governor and Hispanic, son of a Hispanic mother in a border state, how do you see what's going on with the Republican Party, why it's so tied up in knots on this issue?
Well, let me separate the president. He has come forth with, the start of a decent proposal. He has said, let's have a guest worker program. But then you've got the nativists within the Republican Party who are basically saying, you know, erect this fence, massive border security, basically shutting the country down, which doesn't make sense because we're a nation of immigrants. But also, they basically say for the 12 million, they have no solution. They basically say, you know, we probably should round them up. We should deport them, which is very unrealistic. That's going to cost about $200 billion. What are you going to do, knock on doors in homes and find them and then deport them? I think the legalization path, you get rid of the bad apples that have bad records. You don't put the ones that, for instance, that are already here ahead of those that want to come on a legal basis that maybe are in Mexico or Guatemala waiting to come legally. And it's messy, but you got to be realistic. You got to realize that there are some jobs that some of these workers are doing that Americans don't want. There should be some sectors, agriculture and others, where these individuals, if they prove to be good citizens, if they're paying taxes, if they're maybe going to church, if they're participating in civic activities, kids in schools, have no records, they all should pay a fine for having come in here legally. That I do believe, but I think it's a step in the right direction instead of doing nothing. And the Republican Party is basically holding back good legislation in the Congress that might make it through. So you got to separate. The president at least has made a decent start, but he's got to use political capital to get an immigration bill passed that has those three elements.
Do you think this is going to happen, or are we going to continue to bobble this issue forward with the status quo ruling, Governor?
Well, the status quo is really going to make it very divisive in this country unless we pass something. I'm encouraged for the first time that at least they're holding hearings and that the House and Senate have promised to do something by the end of this year. I doubt if they will this year, but as long as next year we really tackle this issue, and I think McCain and Senator Kennedy have a bill that makes sense, but I would toughen their bill with stronger border security. I just got very good news yesterday that New Mexico is going to get 265 more Border Patrol agents along our border, which is about 180 miles. We don't compare to Arizona and California and Texas in terms of size and scope of the problem, But at least it's a step in the right direction. It's not going to eliminate the problem, but it's going to contain it, and that's the best we can do. Another step is we've got to talk to Mexico strongly and say, hey, Mexico, you got to do something. You got to create jobs at the border. You got to help us with the illegal smugglers that are bringing these people in along with drugs. And we've not done that either.
A big agenda there in a tough spot, a state of emergency last summer in New Mexico. Governor Bill Richardson in Santa Fe, New Mexico, thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks very much. Take care.
Mark Krikorian, Tamar Jacoby, please stand by. We have to take a short break here. We'll be right back. We're talking about America's borders and immigration policy and the showdown over that policy inside the GOP. Listeners, you can join us. What's the downside to illegal immigration? Are citizens losing jobs, wages, taxes, their identity? And do we have a French-style crisis coming here or a different future? We're at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
Support for On Point comes from the listeners of WBUR Boston. Bicon Dental Implants, offering short implants that can eliminate the need for bone grafting. Information is available at Bicon.com, B-I-C-O-N.com. And Private Wealth Management at Babson Capital. For more than 60 years, helping clients build and preserve wealth through financial planning, investment management, and trust services. In Cambridge and on the web at BabsonCapital.com.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about America's borders, immigration policy, and the rough showdown inside the GOP over illegal immigration. You can join the conversation. What do you think? Is the undocumented workforce a blessing or a curse? 1-800-423-8255 is our number. We've been joined by Mark Krikorian, Executive Director of the Center for Immigration Studies, and Tamar Jacoby, Senior Fellow at the Manhattan Institute. Right now, Stephanie's calling from Charleston, South Carolina. Hi, Stephanie. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hello, madam. What do you think? What do you know?
Well, I was just calling to make issue with the point earlier that that the response of employers would be if we lose this pool that we would have to pay, you know, higher wages.
Yeah.
Which the assumption there is that we're not, and we are. Well, so at least some of us are.
You are what? You're paying the same wage to citizens and to illegal workers?
Well, I don't. They have their documentation. They're not illegal, but we are paying the same wages. And secondly, in 3 years, that's the only new applicants that we have. So the saying that the response is that other people will take these jobs, it's not an accurate response.
What kind of business do you have, Stephanie?
Construction and painting. And so there's no modernization of tools or anything to use.
And you're basically relying, then, you're saying, on Mexican workers from Mexico to keep your business going?
Yes. That's not strictly our wage pool, but it's the majority is that now.
And do you want a wall put up? Do you want tougher enforcement, or do you want to just keep the stream coming?
No, I don't know that the wall would do any good. I think as long as the need is here, and that the need over there is for people to come to get higher wages, I don't think a wall will make any difference at all.
Stephanie, thank you very much for your call. I want to turn right now, if I may, to Indianapolis and Congressman John Hostetler serves Indiana's 8th District. He's in his 6th term there. He's chairman of the House Immigration Subcommittee. His committee is holding hearings today on this topic. Congressman Hostetler, thanks for being with us.
Good to be with you, Tom.
So you're author of the Secure America Act, which would do a lot of things, including sending U.S. troops to the border. You heard our caller there, a construction company owner from Charleston, South Carolina, who says, look, I pay the same wages to people from Mexico as I do to Americans, and I don't want the flow shut off. You're working very hard to shut that flow off. What's up?
Well, the fact is, Tom, that according to the Center for Labor Market Studies, in a hearing that we had earlier last year, we found that in fact, between 2000 and 2004, there was a net reduction of 500,000 native-born American citizens in the workforce, meaning that there were over 500,000 fewer employed in 2004 than there were in 2000. That takes into account the demographic change and the increase, obviously, in the population of native-born Americans. But we increased employment of foreign-born workers by over 2.3 million. And so there is, the center went on to conclude that that in fact there has been a displacement of workers in the workforce. The simple fact of the matter is that we are handing jobs over to foreign-born workers at a record rate, losing employment for native-born Americans, and not only that, but losing the hope that some of these do as they get into their first line of work. And so the statistics speak for themselves.
So you say let's stop it. Congressman, how far are you willing to go to stop that flow of illegal immigrants in terms of calling out the military or putting up a wall, a fence?
Well, my bill, the Secure America Act, gives the president the discretion to use the military as we transition to a higher workforce for the Border Patrol, for example. Legislation that I got into, amendments that I got into legislation passed last year in the Intelligence Reform Bill called for a doubling of the Border Patrol over 5 years and a tripling of the interior enforcement capability of Immigration and Customs Enforcement. And so we're going to get there eventually. My bill allows the president in the interim, during this gap in time, you might say, to use the military to enforce the border.
And what about the notion of a fence from the Gulf of Mexico to the Pacific? Is that practical? Are you for it?
Well, I am, because it has worked in San Diego. It has worked in Southern California. And if something works on a smaller scale in that way, I believe it can work on a larger scale. The fundamental discussion we need to have, Tom, is do we believe that our borders should be open? Right now, our borders are very porous, and hundreds of thousands of foreign-born individuals are streaming across our border, breaking our laws as their first act on U.S. soil, and we are not doing very much to stop that. And so my bill and other provisions and other legislation would, like a fence, would slow that down, would complement the work of the Border Patrol in order to enforce our laws.
And what about the 11 million already inside the United States, many of them working hard, contributing in their way to the U.S. economy? How do you deal with them in a way that's legal, fair, and humane?
Well, first of all, they are here illegally. That's a good context in which to begin the discussion. Secondly, the employers that employ illegal aliens are violating the federal law that was put in place in 1986. And so this is another discussion we should have, is whether we should do away with our borders, which I am opposed to, or strengthen our borders with a fence and with the use of the military in the interim, or if we should repeal laws with regard to illegal immigration and open our borders, which I am opposed to, and simply allow business in America to hire whomever they want. We have to realize that once we do that, that we not only continue the process that we have now, but we expand it significantly. We had testimony before our subcommittee. 95% of the rest of the world has a lower standard of living than the United States. So we're going to open up our borders, not just to the citizens of Mexico and Central and South America and the like, but we've found recently with the explosion of OTMs other than Mexicans that the rest of the world is getting this story, and they're coming in mass, and we've got to do something to stop that.
Congressman Hostetler, joining us today from Indianapolis, we thank you very much for your perspective. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Tom.
Republican Congressman John Hostetler. Tamar Jacoby, Mark Krikorian, there we've had Richardson and Hostetler. Tamar Jacoby, what do you think of the arguments these two men make?
Well, Congressman Hostetler is I think he has his focus on the wrong place. Again, of course, everyone wants to get control. It's not he's mischaracterizing the rest of us to say that we don't want to have no borders, we want to repeal the laws. I want to have laws that work, and I want to have a border that we have control over. But the way to get that is actually, once you have realistic laws in place, the place to put your enforcement resources is in the workplace. The border is not going to be an effective place. You build a fence. By the time you're done building the fence, you'll have 100 tunnels and who knows how many thousands of boats. The place to get control is by making it impossible, giving, as Mark Krikorian said earlier, giving employers the tools to tell which worker is authorized and which isn't, an electronic verification system. But in order to do that, you have to give them the workers they need. So it's a trade-off. You create a pipeline where they get the workers they need, and then you ask them to make sure that they're using legit workers.
Mark Krikorian, what about your view of Governor Richardson's outlook on this and Congressman Hostetler? How do you interpret?
I think the basic misunderstanding, the fallacy, is this idea that employers need these people, so let's create a mechanism, a channel that legalizes the flow that's going to happen anyway.
You heard our caller from Charleston saying, yes, I got a company and I totally depend on them, she said.
The fact is that the presence of the foreign labor and the expectation of more foreign labor distorts the development of these industries very significantly. Let me just give you a quick example from agriculture. The sugarcane industry in South Florida, until 20 years ago, all sugarcane was harvested like it was the Middle Ages. It was sweaty, shirtless men with machetes hacking at sugarcanes, and they imported Jamaican workers to do that. What happened was the guest worker provisions were, in the employer's eyes, very onerous. They violated all of them. They were sued. And what happened is these guest workers, so-called, cost more than they were worth at some point. And the farmers threw up their hands, said, this isn't worth it. And they started putting their money into developing sugar harvesters.
See, there's
today,
always another way. So tighten up and go to attrition.
And today, 100% of sugar canes harvested by machine. So it's one guy who's a legal worker driving a machine and going home to his family at night. Every element of the economy, even the service industry, can find those kind of radical paradigm-shifting changes that increase productivity.
Robots bussing tables tomorrow?
Exactly. I was going to say, what about the robots bussing the table? What about the people, the nurse's aide who gives the old lady in the nursing home a back rub? We're going to do that with machine?
I'm happy to give you examples of that, too. There are all kinds. For instance, in restaurants, it's precisely because we have an artificial superabundance of labor that the advances such as ordering electronically from your table and paying electronically aren't being implemented in this country. And what happens is, what that means is not that you're going to have Rosie the Robot or whatever it was from the Jetsons, you know, bring you your food. What it means is the waitress that can only handle 5 tables now will be able to handle 12 tables, so you'll need fewer of them. That kind of thing. It's not my business or Tamar's to tell business how to work. Our point is, set up the parameters within which businesses make their normal decisions.
But I agree with that, but you're the one who wants to cut off the supply of labor to skew that choice.
From outside the American labor market.
From the
my
global
point
labor
is,
market.
The parameter is not, yeah, exactly. My parameters are not the global labor market, but the American
That's
labor market.
That's where we have a difference.
I want to draw the map with another voice here a little bit, if we may. Joining us from San Diego is David Gutierrez. He's professor of history at the University of California at San Diego. He's author of Walls and Mirrors, Mexican Americans, Mexican Immigrants, and the Politics of Ethnicity. Professor Gutierrez, thank you for being with us.
Good morning, Tom.
You must have been paying close attention to this very hot debate over immigration on Capitol Hill, a kind of inside the GOP debate. What do you make of it, David Gutierrez, and the terms that are the way the debate's being framed?
Well, it's a perennial issue with the GOP fighting itself between free market thinkers and those who are law and order people who want to see the kind of draconian enforcement both of the border and of the population already here.
But are you sympathetic when Mark Krikorian says, look, we've got a lot of Americans here, we can do this, we'll do it with higher technology and higher wages without workers from abroad, or how do you see it?
Well, I admired Mark's work for a long time. I follow his stuff out of his center in Washington. But I think this whole discussion has missed a very large component that no one's talked about, and that's the issue of globalization. The congressman mentioned that there's a net loss of 500,000 American citizen jobs over the last period. I don't recall what period he was talking about, but nobody's talked about corporate outsourcing of jobs, sending them overseas, and I see the systematic use of undocumented labor in the United States as simply an extension of that same logic.
So you're saying there's no difference between outsourcing a job and insourcing the employee?
The dynamic is the same. Employers are seeking competitive advantage, and in a free market economy, they will constantly do that. And for Mark to say, I have to respectfully disagree, that that there's some huge dividing line between the U.S. domestic economy and the global economy is simply not true anymore.
Let me point to another issue here. The drop head on your book is the politics of ethnicity. What about ethnicity in this debate? I mean, the United States is becoming a much more Hispanic culture. Do you think over time that's going to change the tenor of this debate, Professor Gutierrez, or is this a kind of racial conversation?
Well, a couple of points on that. Another thing I need to take issue with is that when we're talking about the undocumented population, we are talking Mexicans probably comprise between 50 and 60% of that. The other 40 to 50% are people from every other country in the world, and we need to keep that in mind.
And literally, no doubt, every other country.
Absolutely, and we need to keep in mind when we're talking about deportation of people that we're talking about countries other than Mexico and places other than Latin America.
What's the importance of that observation?
Well, I just am concerned that the stereotype of undocumented workers is always leveled towards Mexicans exclusively, and they become, it's part of this larger process of scapegoating. Now, on your other question about the future of ethnic politics, we are talking about the emergence of a majority of Latinos here in California and other places over the next 40 to 50 years. And if we seal the border now and erect a wall now, over the next 5 or 10 years, that is going to remain true no matter what. The demographic engine has already been started, and there's no turning that back.
But does it matter if California's majority Latino, does that or should it change American immigration policy?
If you follow the public opinion polls, Latinos in the United States, both citizens and non-citizens, the divisions within those populations fall pretty much along the lines of the mainstream. There is real division and real debate about the future of immigration policy.
Mark Krikorian, what do you think about the changing demographics of the United States? Will that change American priorities in the century that we're now in? Is it going to be the same debate 50 years from now, even with a Latino majority in many states, maybe nationally?
Yeah, well, I don't think necessarily it would change the debate, because the interesting point is that the first victims of excessive immigration are yesterday's immigrants, because it's their job prospects that are undermined, their schools which are affected, the services they depend on which are pressured. And frankly, I think Tamar and I here are an example of this. I mean, I'm the grandson of Armenian immigrants, and I assume her parents or grandparents were Eastern or Central European Jewish immigrants.
We're all in that boat at some level.
But that's my point, is that doesn't then preclude debate or determine what anybody's position should be. There are, in fact, decisions we need to make as Americans, and I have to say the whole issue of ethnicity, and that somehow an increasing number of Hispanics is going to determine or sort of weaken a commitment to tough immigration is just a kind of racial essentialism that we really need to avoid.
Tamar Jacoby, we've just got a minute left here. How do you see the politics of this playing out over the next year before the midterm elections within the GOP, which after all has both houses of Congress and the White House, so it's pretty much in GOP hands? What do you see coming?
I think it's going to be quite the battle. I think that's going to be closest to the battle we had over NAFTA some years ago. Will we actually pass a bill by the time people go home to campaign next fall? I'm not sure. I think we might come close. We might debate it all this time as sort of topic A, and we may pass something. We may just come close and have to defer it until after the 2006
election. Is it a winning issue for Republicans to have this so hot and in the forefront, or a loser?
I think some think it's a winning issue. The truth is, in the past, nobody has ever won or lost an election on immigration. There's the antis, the people who want to seal the border, scream. They control a lot of talk radio shows. They are a tiny percentage of the voters, and no elected official has ever, in recent decades, won or lost on this. I think a lot of congressmen are kidding themselves that they're going to ride it to victory.
And the economy turns on. Tamar Jacoby, senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute, I want to thank you for being with us this hour. It's been great to have you.
Thanks for having us.
And Mark Krikorian, Executive Director of the Center for Immigration Studies. Mr. Krikorian, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Tom.
Professor Gutierrez, a final word. Are you hopeful, or is this going to lead to some kind of giant conflict in this country, a la France?
Well, I think the conflict will be there, but the issue about the people who are already here, they are already part of American society. They own homes, they have families, they have U.S. citizen members, and I think ultimately that's going to be the deciding factor.
They're with us. Professor Gutierrez at the University of California, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Tom.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR, National Public Radio.